Today's Mishnah in Masechet Taharot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is a Perek Vav Mishnah He, in which we continue to look into the dinim of the Safek Tumah B'Rishut HaRabim, the Safek Tumah B'Rishut HaYachid, and combinations of the same. And now we're in the question of what exactly gives something the status of a Rishus HaYachid or Rishus HaRabim, vis-a-vis Tuma. Remember, we had the fascinating Machlokas yesterday in the question of, does the literal limud from Sota, does that define for us what the situation is? So that if you're not in exactly the same location in the Rishut HaYachid, it's not similar to the lover's tryst of Sota, we're over there. The definition of this Rishus HaYachid is not the technicality of whether it is Rishus HaYachid, but whether it is this same place where this lover supposedly is. In which case, if we're learning that into the dinim of Tumah V'Taira, so then, according to Rabbi Lothar, I mean, it's ridiculous to say that if somebody knows that he was in Rishus HaYachid, so let's say he went into the Mavui, but he wasn't sure if he had ever gone into the Chatzar, which they're both Rishus HaYachids, and the Tanakhama considered that to all be a Safek Tumah Rishus HaYachid. And according to Rabbi Elazar, a Safek Bia, a question of whether I'm not even sure that I was in the same Rishus HaYachid that you were in, is ridiculous for me to say that that's the same as Sota, because the whole point of Sota is that if I know you were alone with this putative lover, then I'm saying that she was Nitma'ah. We're going to assume she's a Sota. But if you weren't in the same room, what's the difference if two people were in private rooms? I don't understand how that has anything to do with the limud from the Sota. But I mean, that opens up the question of how exactly do we look at the definition of the Safek in the Rishut HaYachid? What is the Rishut HaYachid? What is meant by the Rishut HaYachid? That it's just me and the Safek Tumah itself, that's the point. So let me explain, says the Mishnah. Let's say someone was nichnas lebik'a b'yemot ha-geshamim, and there's Tumah in a particular Sada. This is where we're up to, Mishnah, hey? You said, okay. This is very similar to the case that we had yesterday. There is Tumah in a field. Now remember that because this large valley, there may be 100 fields there. Each one of those fields is not surrounded by a fence of any kind, but it's demarcated with what we called the Meitzar of the Sada. So it's like a little mark on the land with it, where it's either raised or it's a little bit lower than the level of the field. And that defines the field for us. Now, obviously, a definition like that has no meaning in terms of Mechitza. And it doesn't really have any meaning to us in terms of the dinim of Shabbat, let's say. Remember, when it comes to Shabbat, well, we're going to define Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid. Rishut HaYachid is defined as a place that is set off by actual 10 tefach high demarcations, which is separating it from the area around it. If it isn't that, then it's not really a Rishut HaYachid. But what's interesting is that by Shabbat as well, the Rishut HaRabim, it's true that the Rishut HaRabim cannot be a Rishut HaYachid. Okay, that's true. But what you need to understand is that the concept of Rishut HaRabim on Shabbat is also dependent on the usage by people. So you may have a place that is 100% not a Rishut HaYachid. It has no mechitzas at all. Wide open territory. That doesn't make it Rishut HaRabim, because you still require the usage of people. And in fact, according to many shitas, you need the similar usage to the way that the Midbar was used by Yitzias Mitzrayim, where we were given the definitions of Rishut HaYachid Rishut HaRabim, which means that it needed to be used by 600,000 people. In other words, it needs to be a major thoroughfare. So this is an interesting thing, because when it comes to Tumah, the only thing that we're interested in is privacy. Because that's what we learn from Sota. That means that if it's an area in which two's company and three's a crowd, the moment that there's three, there's no privacy. You're not going to make love in the case of the sota if there's other people around. So by the limud from Tuma, it's a function of Rishus HaRabim is if there's three people. And what about if there's walls? That doesn't matter. It only matters how many people are present or would normally be present. When it comes to Shabbos, it's true that it does matter that people should be able to be present, but it's also dependent on mechitzas. And therefore, the Mishnah addresses this in various ways that we're going to be seeing over the course of the next two Mishnayos. So somebody comes into an entire valley. It's full of different sadot. It's during the rainy season, and during the rainy season, people do not traipse over other people's fields because you're not really allowed to damage the other person's field. And therefore, we don't have people walking through these fields. He goes into Bika Bimot HaGeshamim, and one of these demarcated areas, which are not demarcated by mechitzas, but which are just demarcated by a property line. So there's a tumah in one of those places. And he says, look, I know I went into the valley, but I'm not sure that I went into this particular field. Eini yodea im nichnasti lo tos sadeh im lo nichnasti. So then by Rebbe Elazar's standards, who says that, look, we need to know that you and the lover, in this case, you and the tuma, were together in the same Rishus HaYochid. Well, if you're not even sure that you ever were in that sutter where the tuma was, what's the difference if the entire valley is considered to have a din of Rishus HaYochid, but it's not identical with the Rishus HaYochid, which is demarcated, and it's not identical with the Rishus HaYochid in which there was the actual tuma. Therefore, I say that you're still tar because it's a suffik bia. It's not a suffik tuma of Rishus HaYochid. Whereas the Chachamim say, that makes no difference. The point is that if you're in a Rishus HaYochid, the demarcation doesn't change its definition, and basically you're still alone in a Rishus HaYochid. And therefore, this is a Suffolk Tum of Rishus HaYochid, which is Tomei. So this is an extension of the Sugya that we had in the previous Mishnah. So basically, the Mishnah that we had before was telling us that even if these Rishus HaYochids are demarcated with mechitzas, because in the case where you went into a mavui and you're not sure if you went into the chotzer, or if you went into the chotzer, you're not sure if you went into the bayit. Now, those are not just demarcated loosely. Those are really totally different areas, right? And even so, the rabbanit say, it's irrelevant. The question of did you or did you not interact with Tuma is a question of whether you interacted with Tuma and Rishus HaYochid. That's the question. Well, do I care whether the question itself is, did I interact by entry or did I interact by touching? And that's irrelevant. And here it's coming to tell me, actually, the opposite, that according to Rebbe Elazar, even though there are no mechitzas and there's no actual difference between one field and the other, it's just really a question of who owns what and these like light markings at the edge of the field, even that is sufficient to create a different Rishus HaYochid, which according to Rebbe Elazar is of profound importance in the comparison to Sota. And therefore, you're not in the same room with the Sota if you're not in the same room with, in this case, the same Sada, with the Tuma. So this, the two Mishnayas, Mishnah Dalet and Mishnah Hey, between them, bring out very strongly the extent of this question of, is it the same vis-a-vis mechitzas, or the same without any kind of mechitzas between them? Mishnah, Perek Vav, Mishnah Vav. So, look, the din is that a suffik tuma, bereshut hayochid, that is considered to be a suffik, which is tameh, unless you know that you can say, I know that even though I was here, I definitely did not touch this thing. Now, that's what it says in the Mishnah. Lamaisa, when the Gemara discusses these cases in the Bavli, it says that that's not really the meaning, until you know, because until you know sounds like until you know 100%. But the Gemara is going to come out that you even go according to a rove. And if the rove chances are that you never came in touch with it, then the rove against the tuma, even Rishus HaYachid, is enough to say that that's not called a suffix, and that the rove actually decides it, and it isn't considered to be a vada tuma Rishus HaYachid. And vice versa, if it's a suffix in Rishus HaRabim, you'd be tahor, unless you know for a fact that you did touch it. And again, we would go according to the rove. If the rove is that you came in contact with it, then you would be tummy, even though it's Rishus HaRabim. But what is considered to be Rishus HaRabim? What is considered to be Rishus HaYachid? So here, instead, which of course this is the Derech of the Mishnah, instead of giving you the clear-cut descriptions of what exactly the issues are, the Mishnah talks about specific cases and then allows you to ferret out with your analysis of what actually this means. And that way we're able to include a lot of complex, not so clear issues in what appears to be a very simple discussion. So what would we call a Rishut HaRabim, for instance? So let me tell you something. We need to describe Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim both in terms of Ilchot Shabbat and in terms of Ilchot Tumah. We just got off of two Mishnayos that talk about Mechitzas or other levels of demarcation. So it's about time we talked about the confusion of the actual presence of a Rabim to make something Rishus HaRabim, or the actual presence of Mechitzas to make something Rishus HaYachid. Now, I'm not going to give you here, says the Mishnah, I'm going to give you here all of the various dinim of Rishus HaYachid vis-a-vis Shabbat. So if the Mishnah wants to keep things simple for dummies, then we need to have a little bit of an intro to understand, okay, what are we relying on when we start making these distinctions? Well, we're relying on the fact that a Rishus HaYachid and Rishus HaRabim, when it comes to Shabbos, is not a binary question. When it comes to Tumah, it is a binary question. The reason it's not a binary question with Shabbat is because the requirements for Rishus HaYachid and the requirements of Rishus HaRabim don't end in a sharp line. There's a lot of issues between them. And the nature of those issues, of course, is what's brought up in the halacha of there are arba Rishus HaShabbos. It's a real Rishus HaYachid, which is demarcated with actual mechitzas, and it also has the necessary length and width in order to be a mokum chashuv for itself. And then there is a mokum p'tur, and then there is a karmelit, and then on the other extreme, there's a Rishus HaRabim. So, the Rishut HaYachid, to be a real Rishut HaYachid, when we say a real Rishut HaYachid, we mean that if you would carry from it into Rishus HaRabim, there would be an actual chiyuv of Chil Shabbos. You have to bring a Korban Chatas for that. But if you carry from a semi-Rishut HaYachid, which is a Carmelite, or a Mokum Patur, you carry from that into a Rishus HaRabim, that's not the same as carrying from Rishut HaYachid into Rishus HaRabim. It may be an Isser, but it's not a real Chil Shabbos, because these Mekomot are defined by the Rabbanan as being things to treat as if they're Rishus HaYachid, but they're not really. Furthermore, what makes it even more complex is that sometimes these rishus can very much look like each other. Let's take an example that we spoke about earlier. Somebody's in rishus harabim in the sense that there are absolutely no mechizas, and therefore it is not a circumscribed space in any way. Wide open. It still may not be rishus harabim because it has to be usable by the rabim. And therefore, if nobody's going to use it, let's say it's flooded and nobody wants to get soaking wet and walking through it. So then even though it's not demarcated, it's still not a real Rishus HaRabim. And if you would carry, what would be the sign of that? Well, there's two signs. If you would carry Arba Amot Rishut HaRabim, you would not be chayiv in a case like that because it isn't really a Rishut HaRabim. Or if you carried from that Rishus into a real Rishut HaYachid, it also would not be considered to be real Hakmasah because it isn't really a Rishut HaRabim. So what we need to do over here, since we're not interested, says the Mishnah, in giving you over all of the dinim of Erevin and all of the dinim of Shabbos, we've got two mesechtas for that. All I want to discuss over here is the nature of the presence of the Rabbin as being a factor in defining something as either Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah Rabbin. And that's the only thing that I'm going to be contrasting over here. So because of that, when I say something is Rosh Hashanah for Shabbos, all I'm interested in really saying is it's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbin for Shabbos, because I'm only focusing on the question of the public use. So that since when it comes to Tuma, the meaning of Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid is in terms of public use versus private use. I'm only looking to that particular factor, public use versus non-public use, in its impact on the dinim of Shabbos. I'm not going to get into the question of the technicalities of the different levels of circumscription of spaces, which is a very complex sugya for which we have two whole mesechtas to deal with. Therefore, let me tell you like this. What's called a Rishus Rabbin? Okay, so we've got these Beit Gilgul. Now, Beit Gilgul is this mountainous area. It's got these paths that you walk over, and anybody can access them, and they're very wide, but they're very steep. And, you know, there's a big sign, HaMaslul Azeh Rak LeMumchim, or something like that. Well, if it's that kind of place where the Rabbim is not going to be going here, because it's just too difficult for most people to negotiate these types of hills, so it doesn't matter that they may be wide open, and they may be meant for the use of anybody, but the fact is that people don't use them. And therefore, since they're not used by the requisite number of people that need to use Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, maybe, I don't know, maybe 100 people a day pass over them, but that's not called Rosh Hashanah Rabbim because they're not open to everyone. So when it comes to Shabbos, let's call that Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Nah, it's not really Rosh Hashanah Yochid. But what we're saying is, anything that's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is a Rosh Hashanah Yochid, the Gabi Shabbos, in terms of the halacha that you're not allowed to carry from one Rosh Hashanah to another Rosh Hashanah. Over here, you want me to know that this is not called a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. It would not be, in this case, a chiyuv of going from a real Rosh Hashanah Yochid into this, or if you would carry in it Arba Amos, you would not be over on Chilul Shabbos because it's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbin. So the meaning of Rosh Hashanah Yochid here is only because of the limited usage for Shabbos, this does not qualify as Rosh Hashanah Rabbin. But Benogea Tuma, there's certainly, it's meant to be open, and there's people that do pass there. I mean, it's a place where three people are generally within sight of each other, and therefore, you're not going to engage in any public lovemaking because somebody may be coming across the hill and you don't want to be discovered making out with this guy's wife. And that's exactly what we do learn from Sota, right? So when it comes to defining this vis-a-vis Tuma, v'nitma'a, so v'nistra v'nitma'a, she was alone. Alone means that you're secure in being alone, that people don't come by here. And therefore, when it comes to Tuma, this would be considered to be a Rosh Hashanah Rabbin when it comes to Tuma. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you guys are getting very mixed up. It's true that the Chachomim did use this area called Beit Gilgul. They did use this area as an indication of the dinim of the Rishuyos, but not the way you said it. They mentioned it because they wanted you to realize that this is called a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim both for Shabbos and also for Tuma. Because basically, if you don't have three people present at the time, and there's only like an off chance that somebody's going to interrupt you, you'll take your risks about lovemaking. So you'll put up a sign and write Lover's Lane, you know. All right. So then it's also considered to be a Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Now, there are cases, let's say, Shvilina Mefulashim Leborot, or Leshichin, or Lemarot, or Legitot. All of those cases are called Rosh Hashanah Yochid LeShabbat. And they're still called the Rishut HaRabim, the Tuma. So you could have these roads. And these are roads that are actually interrupted by areas that are not really passable. So they end up in sort of dead ends. You got to make yourself your way through. Let's say these are places where there's storage areas in which there are pits and there's caves, or it's an area where people are making wine, and you're going to have to negotiate that. So this is not really a through highway, because you get to a point in which it's going to be hard to get through. That is not considered to be a Rishut HaRabim. And that would be, of course, if there are actual walls, that would give it maybe a real din of Rishus HaYochid, if it had three walls. But if you can't pass through it, then it's also considered to be a Rishut HaYochid LeShabbat, meaning either literally, depending on how it was set up, or not a Rishut HaRabim, meaning Rishut HaYochid. So all of those things are not considered to be Rishut HaRabim LeShabbos, but they are considered to be Rishut HaRabim LeTumah, because that is only a function of how many people use it. And that keeps things very, very simple. Okay, we shall continue in our description of Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYochid, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. Meanwhile, wishing you all of the best, and so happy to be with you once again. And Bezrat Hashem, Michael El Chaya. Go to everyone. A wonderful day.